See you later.
Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart, show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. My name is Lynn, and I'm glad that you are with us today. If you are in the Fredericksburg area, I know you are particularly glad that the weather has finally broken from this intense heat and we're able to enjoy being outside again. So before we get started with our show, I want to let you know of some things coming up. On August 10th, I cannot believe it is almost August. On August 10th, we're going to have Michelle Miller talking to us about limbic resonance. And I'm excited about this show because basically science is catching up with all the spirituality that I've been exposed to in my life, and they're starting to prove that there's physical responses in the body that are resonating with this energy stuff that we're out here talking about. So that's on August 10th. On the 24th of August, we're going to have Kelly Centers back, and she's going to be talking to us about hypnotherapy. And for those of you that are interested and may be watching it this week on the 29th, actually, Kelly is starting her Universal Laws course online here with the Honoring Hour. So we hope that you'll go to our main site, www.thehonoringhour.com, and sign up for that. There's a link to the registration page and more information there. And then on September 7th, we are going to have Olivia from Ray of Light Massage Therapy, and she's going to be talking to us about hot stone massages. They are fantastic. I just had another one yesterday, and Olivia is fantastic. I'm in the Fredericksburg area, but there are wonderful hot stone masseurs out there. If you ever have a chance to get one, I highly suggest you do. So that brings us to today's show, and I'm excited to have back on the show Michael Mierdad. He is a renowned spiritual teacher and healer. He's the author of several popular books, one of which we're going to talk about today, and that title's You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up. I'm really psyched to talk about that. Michael has a myriad of things that he does, and so I'm just going to turn the show over to him and let him explain who he is and how he got to where he is today. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hello, Lynn. Great to be back.
Great. Thank you for coming in. Now, when I originally had you on the show for another topic, but I really enjoyed when I saw the title of this book, You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up, because throughout my process of becoming more conscious, there were definitely times that I felt like I was certifiably nuts, and still do. I mean, that's not a past tense thing by any means. So I was psyched to see the title of this book, and I was really excited to read about it. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got to this book and, you know, your own process and what you're doing in the world today?
Sure. Thanks for asking. Basically, the title itself, we'll start with that because it sort of means a couple of things, but really part of it is that it's inevitable when a person decides to get their act together, get their life together, it's just inevitable you're going to be questioning other things in your life. If you're deciding to become happier and get your relationship in life, you know, whether it's with people or a person, and you want to get that kind of in order, cleaned up, improved upon, you're going to have to clean up some things that aren't working. When you want to find your soul's purpose job-wise, you're inevitably going to be questioning the old job, the 9-to-5. So when you want to improve things for the better, it usually means questioning things that aren't the better, right? And so what accompanies that is a sense of feeling like there's something wrong with you. People, generally it's going to be people. You'll also feel that way, but people won't make it much easier. The folks around us tend to say you must be crazy to be questioning your job. You're lucky to even have a job. They say you must be crazy to think of, you know, to be questioning your relationship, you know, when you have children or you have this, or, you know, this family doesn't believe in divorce, our family, you know, so we shouldn't break that pattern, or our family has been in this business for 6 generations, you know, who are you to question it and want to go and do something else? It just commonly happens where people, pressure us with staying with complacency or staying with what is and the common what whatever's around us and not question things. That's why I use in the book the old fable, the emperor is naked, you know, the little boy saying, when everybody else wants to just be deluded that let's just say everything's okay, the emperor is wearing the finest garb, like in other words, everybody should just be in this trance and say, you know, everything's okay. It was a little boy who didn't know better, who didn't know that you're supposed to just go along with what everybody else says. And a little boy steps out and says, you know, something's off here. The emperor is naked. And gradually other people start to see it, but at first they're confused and, of course, they're bewildered and they're trying to shush the boy. And that's what happens to us a lot. So what I'm saying in part with the title is I'm sort of trying to comfort people by saying, you know, I know people will pressure you and or you yourself will feel like you must be crazy. But in all probability, you're waking up. You know, there's a very good chance that you're just saying something's not right here and I'm questioning it. Something's not right here. I want to improve upon something. You could be in a church and find, you know, be involved with a church and say, you know, I go to church on Sunday, but I'm not happy. Something must be wrong with it. And you should question it. In fact, if you're meditating and praying and going to church and doing mantras and standing on your head and eating special foods and you're still not improving your life, something's not right. You should question it. If I teach you meditation and it doesn't improve your life, you need to either ask me about it as a teacher, ask me and I'll give you different techniques, or you need to try a different teacher. We should never settle for anything that isn't getting us closer to a complete remembrance of who we are. And it's not like we have to leave the old with criticism and hatred. We don't always have to leave our husbands and wives saying, I would have been happy if it weren't for you, and our spiritual teachers, I would have seen God if it weren't for you. It's just that we have to say for ourselves, you know, for other people, you might be the greatest thing in the world, and this might be the greatest job in the world, but for me, something's not quite right. And so, you know, we and a lot of people and a lot of, even nationwide, worldwide, we go through this questioning occasionally, which I'll talk about later on when I'm talking about the stages of this process. But it happens for us individually on small levels that we don't even see, and then it happens on bigger levels. And when it really hits us, the real big times in our life where we're saying something's not quite right, that actually ignites in our lives something called the dark night of the soul. So this whole concept of waking up, I call in the book, it's subtitled The Five Stages of the Soul Transformation Process. And the book could have just as easily been called that because it is just as much that, if not more. That's what the book is about. It covers the times you think you're going crazy or the times you're questioning your life or the times you're saying, it's time to improve upon my life. But the actual process, there is an actual process. And it isn't one that I own or copyrighted or invented. This is something that everybody goes through, and it's just that nobody ever saw it. Nobody ever labeled it. But it's five distinct stages we all go through. In a nutshell, they are, first of all, dismantling, then emptiness, then disorientation, then rebuilding, and then a new life. And so to slow that down and go back over them briefly at first, when everything in our lives, anything I should say, in our life is complacent or stagnant or whatnot, it's something's going to change. And we used to think, you know, that we're just kind of sitting on this planet like victims and stuff might just hit us. And at best, it's like a test that you're supposed to simply succeed going through. And it's not like that at all. This isn't random and it isn't really tests, certainly not coming from God or your astrological planet or fate or even the environment. All these things outside of ourselves, I understand the validity to some of them. I understand that some of these things have certain truth to some people. No problem there. What I'm saying, however, is when changes are happening in our lives, whatever's going on in our lives, really it's happening from our soul. Our soul is the primary, captain of the ship, as it were, that's sort of navigating us through life. God itself, whether you see God as something outside or within, it doesn't matter so much as the thing called God sees us as perfect, beautiful beings that it's created, or as you know, some of the old scriptures might say, God created us in its image. So we're as beautiful and radiant as God is, But why don't we see it? Why don't we live it? Why don't we feel like it? So something's not quite right. So if you imagine three sort of levels, one above the other, the top level, just imagine being God. And imagine that being like in your upper three chakras, your throat, your third eye, and your crown. Imagine the presence of God being up in the trinity of your upper three chakras. And that presence is beautiful and divine. That's the I am presence of God within us. That's why they say, you know, the kingdom of heaven is within you. So there it is. Imagine that for a second. So that's one level. And that level, which is God, speaks down to the next chakra or level, which is our heart center. And it says simply to come home. It just simply expresses love down from the upper, down into our heart, and says, come home. The heart is where the soul is. And the heart turns downward and looks down at the next level, which is the set of three lowest chakras, which is our humanness. In other words, God speaks down into our heart. Our heart, which is our soul, speaks down into our humanness and says what? Nothing basically but come home. So God speaks to our heart, says come home. Our
hello? Michael? Hello? Okay, hi, this is Lynn. Is there anybody out there that can hear me? Because I cannot hear Michael at all, although he is still connected. For those of you that are in the chat room, if somebody could let me know whether you can hear me. And Michael, if you can hear me, I'm not hearing you, and I've got in the chat room that nobody is able to hear. Although someone heard me typing. Okay, they can hear me. Can anyone hear Michael? No, Michael. Not sure what's going on there. Let me see if I can get him connected here, because he's still on the line, actually. Well, his number's still on there. So bear with me just a moment. What I'm going to do while I'm trying to take care of this is I am going to play one of Sabina Kevinberg's songs. I'm going to go ahead and play I Invite You to Be Free. Bear with me just a moment. I'm going to see if I can get Michael on the line. Thank you very much.
Live your life out loud. Throw away your doubt. Let your spirit shine. Live your life out loud. life of love. Throw away your...
Michael?
Yeah?
Oh, great. You're with us. Okay. In the chat room, can you hear Michael now? Y'all can let us know. That would be great. I know I had to switch to my cell phone. I got bumped off of my phone, and there's some construction going on beside me, but that should not have anything to do with you getting bumped off. So I'm hoping. If someone in the chat room can let me know whether you can hear Michael or not. All right, while we're waiting for that, Michael, I was hearing you were talking about changes and being connected through the heart. I actually got bumped off twice, and I was going to say thank you so much for, you know, going on. I didn't know if you had known that or not. But you were talking about how
yep.
people are going through changes, and if you just want to kind of pick up.
Yeah, we'll just go back over it. And by the way, one of the really clever things about the whole thing is when we got bumped off, I looked at my phone and to make sure I had reception or that I was still online, and I just noticed the time was 11:11. So anyway, on another note, I was only saying that, you know, to visualize the whole thing, I was saying is that spirit speaking down into our heart and our heart speaking down into our human is basically saying, first and foremost, I love you, and secondly, come home. And this, when spirit speaks into our heart, that's fantastic. When our heart speaks into our humanist, that's great. But the humanist's response is, I'll get back to you on that. And that's what I was saying exactly when we got caught off. So I think it's all very ironic because it is the humanist and this material world that creates these challenges, these disconnections, pun intended and non-intended, with spirit, with guidance, with the voice that basically should be guiding the whole picture. So the voice of love speaks, but the humanness is resistant. And so the soul is in between these two. The heart is in between the upper and the lower three set, you know, three chakras, the upper three and the lower three, the divine and the human. And so the heart has a job to reconcile these two voices and says basically, you know, how can we get the humanness to surrender to the voice of God and go home, to come home, to become one with God or spirit or love or whatever again? And so the soul, it's its job, and the soul will do everything it can to make that happen. And it will try always first the easy way and then has to resort to the hard way, meaning as simple as this. Let's use simple, really mundane examples. When spirit speaks to you, it says love, it says come home. Well, on a material level, come home doesn't mean you disappear and go to heaven necessarily. It means a day at a time getting home, growing into that consciousness. And so it might be as simple, one day it might be about opening to new creativity. It might also be expanding on your health and, you know, health and healthiness. It could be taking better care, you know, in that sense. It could be improving upon your relationships. In other words, from the soul's standpoint, improving any area of your life is how you're getting home. It's not just like one day you zap and you go somewhere. It's growing into that consciousness. As I say, you don't go to heaven, you grow to heaven as a consciousness day by day. So the soul is simply trying to find ways to improve your life, in other words, until your life reflects perfectly the God life, the good life. And so that looks like day-to-day changes, and so the soul says, well, I notice you're not taking care of your health, so I think we'll send you some gentle reminders, and it might be that somebody hands you a bottle of herbs you ought to try out, or somebody gives you a business card for a yoga studio, or as you said in your ad when we were coming into the show, the hot stone massage. You know, these are gentle ways that you could go and get in touch with your body and take care of your body the nice way. See, getting a massage is a nice way of getting in touch with your health, your body, and your self-worth. However, if you ignore one after another of these signs and callings, the soul will not give up. It'll say it's time to teach you the hard way to get in touch with your body. It might throw you down a flight of stairs or drop something out of the sky, make it land on you to make you have to now go and get a massage, you see. So that's the hard way. And the funny thing is, it's neither good nor bad. It's all really just the soul's attempt to get you to wake up. So that's why again, one of the other definitions or meanings of you're not going crazy, you're just waking up. Things are not really just falling apart. This is your soul trying to get you to get your act together. So there's there's an irony, a beauty, a cleverness, and sometimes what feels like a tragedy. But bottom line, another example would be your relationship. If you're not communicating with your partner. Your soul certainly checks in with you regularly, says how you're doing, and it checks your creativity, your health, your relationships, your inner child issues, your intellect, your wisdom, all levels of your being, and all it wants is to keep improving upon them, like turning the volume up more and more and more on each one until you're full blast God again. But when it finds that you're not communicating with your partner, it'll send gentle messages. There'll be dreams. There'll be, again, business cards set on your windshield from somebody about a relationships counseling or whatever. It'll be an ad on the radio. It'll be something. And listen or don't listen is up to you. It's free will. But when you don't listen, one day you come home and you find your partner's gone or has had an affair. And that's a rude awakening. It's hard to hear. But at the same time, in all fairness, yes, your partner did this and that's inappropriate. That's a bummer. But at the same time, you contributed because you knew you weren't communicating. You knew there was a problem. You didn't do anything about it, so now it's blown up. So whether it's your health, your health doesn't just randomly blow up on you. We know these things are happening, but we don't listen. We don't follow the guidance. We don't follow the gut, the insight, and so forth, the many things around us that mirror to us that something's not quite right. That's why some of the ancient ones, the masters of old, tried to teach the importance of walking a gentle walk and listening to the things around us because they reflect us. They're not just interesting things. They reflect us, whether it's an animal that crosses your path or a synchronicity of some kind or a call formation. Not that you should walk around obsessed on every little sign and symbol, but certainly noticing like a Jedi or a Shaolin master. We're supposed to be waking up more and more and more to ourselves, and in doing that, our surroundings. And our surroundings are mirroring to us what's going on inside. And so we really should have this nice symbiotic walk in life where everything's kind of connected. There's no outside. It's all just a mirror of inside. And so we learn. We learn preferably more and more gently and not need the hard lessons. But when we do go through the hard lessons, let's just get it, give thanks. Learn from it, not only learn from the lesson, but let's also learn that we don't have to go the hard way next time. So again, we can learn the easy way or the hard way. And a lot of people say to me, you know, when are the lessons done? Or why do I still have lessons? Gosh, I've been studying spirituality for a week and a half now, you know. And I just say to folks, you know what? If you're on Earth, stuff can happen. This is what this place is about. It's a place of illusion and the trance of illusion. That drags people down to make you believe you're something that you're not, which is pure spirit ultimately that we are, you know. And so stuff's going to happen, and you should never really gauge your spirituality by whether or not stuff happens. You should only gauge it by how quickly you catch yourself and bounce back when stuff does happen. And that way you're not being harsh on yourself when things do happen, because they will. They will happen. But are you bouncing back? Are you getting it bouncing back? That's the key. And that bouncing back includes not just brushing off the tears and stuffing them and getting over it. No, I'm talking about learning what you're there to learn, integrate the lesson, make it change who you are. You know, I travel all over the world, and I'm constantly on tour. I've been doing this for like 30 years, and I'm constantly on tour. And, you know, it seems like probably 3+ weeks per month. And it's amazing because everybody shares the same struggles. They really do. There might be slightly different flavors and such here and there, but people, you know, suffer with the same struggles. And ultimately, it is we all do on some level know that something greater is calling us, but many are afraid to get on board that train when it whistle blows. There's the complacency. There's the fear of the unknown. There's the I'm used to what's been going on. There's, you know, varying reasons. But at some point, you know, A Course in Miracles tells us everybody has a pain tolerance. And so at some point, enough is enough. And so, our soul is the one that sort of designs what we're going to go through, decides what tests we have to learn. And we need to practice listening to the voice of the soul, the higher self, as it were, and get on board and start moving forward with our lessons. And it's kind of cool because in the end, there are perks. This isn't just about avoiding tragedies or difficulties. The perks are our life really does improve. We really do move forward, and in the end you actually end up with not only less of the difficulties, you're seeing more and more positives, and pretty soon that is your flow. That is your general course. Instead of difficulties and hurdles, all of a sudden you're generally in a course of pretty smooth flow, and it's almost like you're living the life of the gifts of spirit rather than the karma of the ego. And that in itself should be enough. So there are definite perks to it all. But again, I'll go this far, and then you can certainly interrupt me with any thoughts or questions, but I'll go as far as getting through the first three stages. The first stage, again, then, is dismantling. That is when something has been complacent for too long, when we're ignoring some call for too long, then the soul is basically going to say enough is enough, and it's going to topple something. It's going to change something. It's when the relationship ends, the job ends, something comes to an end or gets toppled or changed in some way. And it's usually kind of a rude awakening because we were complacent, we didn't want it to change, or we were too scared. But the soul says, it doesn't matter, I'm going to do this. And it initiates a change. That's called a dismantling. A Course in Miracles makes a reference to that phase or stage of our life as a period of undoing. But it is a period, basically, of dismantling. In fact, I like the Course because it makes this one-sentence reference to this stage of our life, which it calls undoing. But it says, this stage need not be painful, but it usually is. And that's kind of a humorous line, because you almost feel a sense of relief when you hear it doesn't have to be painful, but it's thrown in there, but it usually is. So we ask, why is it? Well, that's the whole premise of the core teachings, the foundation of Buddha, which is that this world is a place of suffering. And when you're attached, when you try to attach to anything of this world, it's going to cause you pain, because it's either going to leave you or you're going to leave it or whatever. But all things in this world will end, and you will inevitably suffer from the attachment. Not the thing itself, but the attachment to the thing. So what we're saying there is, why does dismantling or a period of undoing have to be painful? It isn't because it exists. It is because of our attachment to whatever it was. So it isn't because your partner left or because your job ended. It's because you didn't want it to. It's because you wanted to hide behind. You wanted to stay in a relationship that didn't communicate. Now you're mad that they left, because it's putting you in the inconvenient position of having to communicate or look at yourself, and you don't want to. You want to be complacent. You want to be just locked down in your ego. When you do this properly, you're going to give thanks one day for everybody and anything that ever created or looked like they were participating in your dismantling process. Because when you really get it and wake up, you just say to yourself, God, I should have done this a long time ago. I mean, it's a funny thing. When you actually go through it, you do feel like you should have gone through it a long time ago. Like it's almost like it was crazy to have ever been complacent or allowed settling to be in your life. But the first stage is dismantling. So something's going to end, come to an end, flip-flop, change, or whatever, and you're going to feel in pain. The second stage is basically what I call emptiness. And what I mean by that is it's like depression. It's emptiness, depression, sadness, grief, a stage of where you go after an ending. It's kind of like the five stages of grief, for example, in itself, by all in one. You're going to go through all variations of the fact that you're sunk, you're depressed. You literally might be in an empty room called an apartment with no furniture because your partner left you and took the house. You literally might just be feeling empty relationship-wise, or empty meaning no job. It's a very scary and dark place. My advice is that since you're in that place, you might as well do something about it. So you're in a position like if you're going to be sunk in this place of emptiness, then now would be the time to put it to use and find out all your deepest issues. Because when you're doing fine and you're complacent in that first stage, you're not going to be able to see some of the things that are now coming up, or you wouldn't easily see the things that are coming up now that you're feeling empty. So again, wow, you know, I'm grateful for that dismantling, because now this is exposing some of my emotional vulnerabilities. So that's kind of cool in some ways, but it doesn't feel very cool. After emptiness for a period of time goes, you know, you go through emptiness, you're going to come to a third stage called disorientation. If your mantra during dismantling is, what is going on, then in emptiness, it's kind of like, why me? And then in the third stage, disorientation, your life mantra, meaning what you're going to repeat most often is, now what? Where do I go from here? So Disorientation is the third stage. Some people say, well, how long do you go to each stage? Well, my goodness, I mean, they can last a year each. They can be 3 weeks of one and 2 years of another. It could be days. It varies per issue, per process, and per person. So we're dealing with an ending. We're feeling empty, and now we're disoriented because we don't know where we go from here. If it's job, then you'd be saying, okay, I thought I was the CEO of a company. I was there for 20 years, and yet they let me go. Now I'm feeling empty. And inevitably, you're going to say, now who am I? Now where do I go? Now what am I supposed to do? That's disorientation. You'll know you're in disorientation when you repeat things like that. It's their symptoms. Those words are symptoms of which stage you are in. So the same thing happens to the woman who has children, and then they maybe go off to college. It's called emptiness syndrome, as in emptiness, that she goes through. They're gone. It's an empty house. It's quiet. She's now lonely. And then she gets to the third stage and starts saying, what do I do now? Where do I go from here? You know, and she can, whatever, she can take up a hobby or something, but that's not the ultimate answer. So what we usually do mistakenly is we go through stage 1, 2, 3. We get a bit desperate because we're in disorientation. We get scared because there's a control freak in everybody, some more than others. And the control freak, the one that panics, is going to try to, in stage 3, it's going to try to manufacture something to get you by, like another partner, date, husband, another job, a hobby, to basically distract you from what you're processing. When you do that, all you're going to do is find yourself dismantled again, empty again, disoriented again, because you're going around and around in the same loop of the problem you originally had and don't want to deal with. So the only solution is to endure this time, to get centered, to get humbled, you know, surrender, and then you'll step over the bridge from stage 3 to stage 4. It's the only way. You will not go over that stage without an attitude of surrender and humility. So we go over that bridge, and when you do, that's where we go into the next two stages. But I'll pause there in case you have any questions about the first few stages, and then we can come back and go into the others.
Yeah, actually I do, because you were talking initially about a lot of our challenge when people start to change is the influence that they have from others. So when you're in situations and you've got your whole life set up, you've got your friends, especially your family. I mean, it's very challenging to kind of distance yourself from your family if you're already not alienated from them, and it's hard to be alienated even when, you know, it's what's for the best. So when you've got that pressure, because in the book you talk about how you can kind of, the way I interpreted it, it's not your language, but you get kind of caught on a spin cycle where you don't allow yourself to go through the processes so that you can cross that bridge.
Right.
What do you have to say to people when they're starting to wake up, they're wanting to make changes, internally they're really excited, but they're getting all this negative influence, or this opposite feedback from their friends and their family? How do they start to move away from that? What is some practical stuff that they could take for that?
Well, in one sense, yes, support systems wouldn't hurt, right? Something like a counselor or a proper friend, support meaning supportive friends, not ones that will enable you. Don't get me wrong, because sometimes we do make really stupid decisions in our life and rash decisions. Sometimes we're making unhealthy decisions, and some people will enable us and say, oh, well, that's fine, you know, we support you, you know, in fact, sometimes they're the ones telling us to do those unhealthy things, whether it's have affairs or do drugs or whatever. Yeah, there are people. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you're wanting to actually hear the call of a better life and go that direction. And those, you should try to surround yourself with people that support and understand, not enable you and your unhealthy decisions, but your healthy decisions. So a counselor would probably be a decent choice, or a prayer chaplain like at a Unity Church, or your minister or whatever. Somebody that you know has experience, spiritual consciousness, an open mind. Yeah, absolutely. Make them a part of your life so they can kind of give you some insight and guidance to move in the right direction. That wouldn't hurt at all. But at the same time, I would also ask myself, you know, how happy am I? How happy do I want to be? How miserable am I and such? You know, ask yourself these questions. If you're going to teeter-totter under the guidance of other people because they say you should do this or you shouldn't do this, if they're trying to, you know, pull you down, and you think, you know, well, you're weakening to their cries, yeah, you should ask yourself, you know, how happy you want to be. Because if you know, like I had a gal who was a client, for example, who was going through a bit of turmoil where she was married and her husband was abusive, physically abusing her. Well, you know, she had a family member that was part of a fundamental religion of some kind, and according to their whatever philosophy, divorce wasn't allowed. It was just, you know, it was a sin or whatever. So ironically, she was told over and over, you can't get a divorce. It doesn't matter if you're in pain. It doesn't matter if he's hurting you. That's an example of, you know what, use your common sense. You're being abused. God doesn't want you to be abused. So somebody's theology is off. Somebody's philosophy is off. Somebody's family members were off when they were telling her, well, honey, you know, it's just God's will, and you just have to hang in there. And, you know, it's just, you don't need to buy into these kinds of things. So I would just ask myself, you know, how miserable do I want to be? How happy do I want to be? And sometimes just say no to these people that would otherwise, you know, talk you into settling. Same with the job. I mean, if you are, you know, you have a family that's done generations of being accountants, let's say, and they own an accounting firm, but you know in your heart you're supposed to be doing something creative. Well, first of all, you have the option of doing something on the side. I don't mean, you know, I don't believe you have to always toss everything 100% out of your life, but it doesn't hurt for you to do it on the side and see what that does and see if some doors open and see if it improves and increases. But at some point, you can say to yourself, you know, I am. I can feel it. I know in every part of my being I want to do this and that, and you start expanding into that. Yeah, the family's going to complain. And, you know, the irony is sometimes one of the reasons they complain is because you're doing what they never did. You know, they're actually jealous that you're doing what they never did. So, but whether that's the case in your, you know, in the person's case or not, you still have to kind of follow your bliss. You have to be thine own self, be true, as the saying goes. So you'll get on board, you start moving, and people will complain about it. And it's usually the people that are the most jealous or the most, you know, stuck in their stuff. And I think there's nothing wrong with you being tactful when you do approach people like this, instead of just saying, here's what I'm going to do, and if you like me, you'll support me, and if you don't, get lost. I don't think you need that. I think you can try to be tactful and say, look, here's what's going on for me. I hope you can support me. You know, give it a shot to be tactful. Try to explain to them that you're trying to follow something blissful. And, you know, if it's just unmanageable that people don't support you, then yes, sometimes, you know what, you got to grow up and say goodbye. Sometimes you got to do it.
We have a good question from someone in the chat room. They want to know, how do you know if a person is the right teacher for you?
Well, the simplest is that there should be progress. I mean, that's the simplest. I don't care if it's a nutrition teacher, a coach, a whatever the case may be. And remember, you don't have to make them wrong if it's not happening for you, but you could move on. And you know, the bottom line is to pick a good teacher. You should be seeing some differences. You should be, I mean, if you go to an accountant, they should be improving your taxes and your financial situation. If you go to a doctor, I wouldn't go to one if my health wasn't going to improve. You know, I would try something else. That never made sense to me that anybody would do less or be complacent. You know, in some countries, your doctors are paid only if you're healthy and not just to deal with you when you're sick, which would encourage you being sick, and then they get paid based on you being sick. Some countries, it's the other way around. They're paid only if you're healthy. So that kind of motivates them to want to help you out. So that's the easiest example there. But I would also throw in, you know, there's also some very strong feelings I have about some things with teachers these days, and I've spoken about this in my newsletters a couple of times. A few years ago, before things economically blew up in the world, I was already warning the world that this was going to happen. In fact, in the year 2000, I was stating grave warnings that the economy was going to fall apart in the near future. But just a couple of years ago, I was talking about spiritual teachers and such. I understand everybody's got to make a living. I understand that they've got their little stories about prosperity consciousness and all that. But spiritual teachers should, above all else, be a good example. We should really be living this. And so, you know, I'm not saying they should give their things away, but by all means, everything should remain affordable. My private sessions are $100. to some people that's a lot, but to most they say, oh my God, that's amazing, because even my counselors at home are less than that. What I do is I charge an amount that is, you know, pretty easy for most people, $100, and it's been that for years. And people will say, well, you've done that for years. I go on tour the next year somewhere, and they'll say, so what are your sessions now? I say, $100. And they'll say, oh, hasn't it gone up? I love it. I love that it doesn't and hasn't gone up. And I work on a lot of big-name people, celebrities and such, and they'll say, how much are your sessions? I'll say, it's $100. They'll say, really? And they say, well, I'm used to paying $1,000. And that's because somebody knows they're a celebrity, and they rip them off. But, you know, I say, well, that's not the point. You know, it's $100 whether, you know, no matter who you happen to be. I mean, I'm not going to charge based on what I can get out of you. So one of the things I think teachers ought to do is get a bit of a clearer priority of what they're in business for. If they're in business and they're only there to make money, I really think that they should just say that. I think that's great, but I think they should say it. I'm in business. I want to make money. I want to get what I can from you. You know, just be clear about that. But don't say that you're God first when, in fact, you turn away people that can't afford. I don't think I've ever, in 30 years, turned somebody away that couldn't afford a workshop. Unless for some reason I felt like they, and it would be really rare and it probably never happened, if I felt like they didn't really want the workshop, they were taking advantage in some way, which would be really rare, as I said. But really, spiritual teachers, they should be, if there were, or any form of somebody helping you, please take inventory, and they should be, in some way you should be improving. And remember, don't fault them if you're not improving, because it could very well be you're not doing what they're asking you to do or suggesting. I mean, it could very well be. But that's probably the best advice I could give.
Great. Now, speaking of your workshops, can you tell us what kind of workshops you have on? I know you mentioned, I think it's you were mentioning an online course or a telecourse. What do you have going on?
Yeah, well, I have a few things going on. You know, I teach a lot of different topics and, you know, approach from several different angles. But there's healing, there's spirituality, there's metaphysics, there's a lot of things I teach and practice, but because they're all connected. But there's one thing. I have an online course on Christ consciousness or spirituality. That's pretty pretty deep, pretty profound stuff. It's like a year course. And it basically does everything from the clearing of the body to the heightening of the soul. It's really, really intense stuff. But you can learn more about it. You can learn more about it from going into my online course is called theinnerchrist.com. So it's theinnerchrist.com. So you can get that from my core website, or you could go to the website directly. And my main website, my core website, is Grail, like the Holy Grail, productions.com. So you can check that out. Then I have a few times a year, I have 5-day intensives. In the springtime, it's a healing intensive, and then in the summer, which is in about 3 weeks, we have a what I call mastery, living mastery workshop. Each of these is 5 days, and then in the fall, there's a spirituality workshop. But each of these is 5 days, and they're, you know, the way I teach, I really like practical and direct and, you know, just applicable. It's just, I love it. I love teaching that way, and it's 5 days of very, very, you know, intense. It's not wishy-washy. It's very cool, very intense, very educational material. In the mastery course, we're learning everything from spirituality to finance, you know, in other words, prosperity, to emotional healing, to physical healing, all kinds of things. It's really thorough. And again, they can look, you know, your folks can look at, listeners can look at a link on my Grail Productions website. And we also have, once a year, we go on sacred sites tours. We might go to Brazil, or we've gone, you know, many times to Europe or Greece or Egypt. And this year, we're doing the sacred sites of Sedona and the Southwest states. So that'll be like the Anasazi sites, New Mexico, Colorado. But it's like a week long, and we're going to some really, really spectacular places that the ancients and the masters of old gathered and did their ceremony. So we'll be doing a lot of that. We'll have some wonderful folks joining up with us that live in those regions. So that's I think that's actually the first week of September. I,
again, they can read about it on the website more, but if people are interested, they can. I think there's just a couple spots left in each of the things we're describing, the workshop, or the online course or whatever. Not the online course, but the Sacred Sites tour. But those are our primary things. It's once a year a Sacred Sites tour. We have an ongoing online course, so that people can join anytime. Whenever they sign up, it'll kick in the next month, so that it's, you know, they'll start at the beginning of a month, but any month is good. And yeah, and then we have, you know, three times a year the major courses. And I also teach a course on Tantra and sacred sexuality once, a couple times a year. And that's 3 days or 5 days, because a lot of people like to learn about that. They like to learn about sacred sexuality, about healing their sexuality and their issues and their abuses or traumas or inhibitions, and wanting to just really come to life and learn about sacred intimacy and how to be better in terms of intimacy with themselves or others. So that's pretty spectacular as well. But I think that pretty much wraps it up.
And your website is very, I mean, it's very in-depth. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on there. So everything that you just talked about, if you want to, if you all want to go to BrailleProductions.com, everything is there, his itinerary, where he's going to be, what he's doing. And he travels all over the world, really. So, you know, you might want to check and see if he's going to be in an area near you and go and see him in person. So, Michael, you know, we've gone through the first three stages, which seem like they're a lot of work and can be challenging, especially if we're not surrendering to the process. But can we talk a little bit about the last two stages? Because that kind of seems where, to me, that feels like the coming up and out, when we're just kind of putting things together.
That's right. The first three stages, remember, these aren't things that will or maybe happen. They're happening all the time. People are always going through dismantlings or emptiness or disorientation moments. They're always going through these, and they're cycling around and around. That's the human condition, because people keep trying to recontrol their lives, and so the lives keep falling apart. The last two stages are only going to happen when you step over a bridge of faith, a bridge of trust and surrender and humility. Beautiful. You step over that bridge. You basically come to a place of saying, it's almost, instead of saying you cross over the bridge, it's almost like saying you have to bow and crawl over the bridge, you know. In a sense, that's why ancient temples often had that stage in initiations where you had to crawl. It meant a humility, a lessening of your ego self, so that you could, on the other side stand in your holiness. So you get over that bridge, one way or another, you get over that bridge, and it means getting to a place of saying, okay, I don't know my own best interest. I don't know how to control or fix my life in a way that is best for me. I don't know how to follow only love and peace and joy and abundance. I'm broken, I'm sad, I'm scared. And so you're learning a humility, a surrender to spirit, to God, to a new voice, a greater voice, the only real voice. And so you're learning to find, to follow guidance. And that's where you're saying, guide me. Where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say on a day-to-day basis, and to whom? It means I'm opening my life up. Show me and let the doors start to open. And when a door starts to crack open, don't go running and kicking it open and saying, I got my new life. Be patient. Listen. Watch for the many doors opening and walk through them gently. If it's a new relationship showing up, don't run in, jump in, and replace it for the last that ended, because then you're going back to compulsions and addictive behaviors. Slow down. Listen, one door at a time. Let it open. Walk through it. Not run. Walk through it. Be gentle with yourself. And make sure that after you walk through a door, if it's the door of relationship or job, walk through it gently enough to keep checking in to see if it feels right for you. The relationship may be new. That doesn't mean it's guided by God. It doesn't mean it's the right one for you. It may be there for only days to teach you something, weeks to teach you something. So walk through it gently, learn what you can, absorb it, and grow the relationship. And if it's only to be grown into, you know, a friendship, great. If it's grown into an intimate friendship, great. If it's grown into live-ins after a while, great. But take it one step at a time. Work into your soul, you know, your soul's purpose gently, tactfully, gracefully, and let that be a step at a time as well. So just really be centered and walk through all this. And essentially the last two steps are rebuilding, which means with spirit you're rebuilding a new life, and the last stage is the new life itself that comes from having done good work, having fallen, you know, followed spirit, having had your life fallen apart, you know, and then following spirit into a new life. Now you're seeing the fruit. In the book, you actually have prayers with each stage to help you through each stage, suggested prayers. You can make up your own, but something along those lines that I suggest. And also exercises or suggestions on how to handle each stage so that eventually you'll get to the highest way of handling how to go through the stage, the five-stage, you know, soul transformation process, because some of us go through it. Everybody's going through it, but some of us do so, most do so as victims, being dragged through the process, one, two, three, and around, one, two, three stages. But eventually you become a student on the path. And a student on the path doesn't get dragged around like a victim through these stages. It basically looks for the lessons and becomes more responsible. And that's a really huge leap to go into that instead of the victim. But there's still a third level of consciousness through which you can go through these stages, and that is as a master. And by master, like I say in my workshop, I like to teach people to be masters, to wake up and become gods and goddesses that they are and deserve to be, and have the lives thereof. So as a master, you actually don't just go through these stages as a victim. You don't go through these stages even just as a student. You go through them as a master, which means you're actually the one who is the soul who's initiating these changes. You're back to being the soul who creates the losses and changes. So now you can change your life, alter your life without losses. You can see what needs change before it becomes a crisis and then a loss and a dismantling. You see these things in advance, you alter them, and you learn to be proactive. You change what's not working before it blows up, in other words. So that's the ultimate goal in it all.
Right. And I just want to remind you all, that everyone that's listening, the book is You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up. It's the five stages of the soul transformation process. And, you know, Michael, you've done a great job of really summarizing, just giving a brief description of the book. And I do want to reiterate, you were reading my mind when you said that you do give exercises, you do give suggestions, you do give prayers. It's a step-by-step, really practical guide with some great explanation of what's going on. It's a wonderful book to have if you are feeling like you're in one of these stages or embarking on them, or, you know, if you know someone that is. It's a great book to have, and I highly recommend it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it doesn't, and very profound. It's, you know, when I got the book, it's not a huge book. It's just packed with profound wisdom. So it just goes to show that, you know, you don't judge a book by its cover, even though it's not large. It's not like one of these 600-page, you know, let me throw the book at you. But everything you've got in here is, it walks you through. It's very practical, and that's what I was looking for, was something that was really practical to give to the listeners that can just take them through.
So, that's right, and that's how I teach it. When you asked about what I recommend for teachers, that's also what I recommend for you to find in teachers, is teachings and teachers. They should be clear, direct, profound in their effects, and so forth. Things need not be complicated. They need to be clear, simple, direct. That's what mastery is. That's what being a teacher should look like. That's what we should look for as students on the path. Everything should just be so beautiful, simple, clear, direct, concise. And yeah, the book is that. It's clean, clear, concise. I think I was very happy the way, you know, with what, the way it came out, and people have really obviously grabbed hold of it and loved it a great deal. And I'll be writing another book. I'll be finishing another book in a matter of a few months on healing, which will be the same format but focusing on how healing is related to this soul transformation process. And by the way, there's a book called Oh for the Love of God by Angela Sorensen, and I think you might end up having her on your show, I guess. But that book is a woman's journey of, basically, it's men or women can read it, but it really defines a woman's journey of she's describing how she went through this process, the soul transformation process. She doesn't call it that, but she's got such a perfect description of going through this process that I really enjoyed her book and recommend it to a lot of people, because mine is telling you about the process and what to do, how to deal with it. Hers is telling you what it is, what it feels like to go through it, what it looks like in your lives, you know, on a day, what it looked like in her life, and how most people, and definitely most women, would be able to relate to her relationship wounds and such, and you know, the being called by people to not make certain changes and so on. So mine's telling about the process, but hers tells you specifically what it looks like in a person's life, more specifically, as I said. But it's a great book. People can check it out.
It sounds like a great companion to this. That's fantastic. Yeah,
yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, thank you, Michael. And I just want to reiterate that your website is www.grailproductions.com. All of your contact information is there. All of the stuff that you're doing, your itinerary, it's really all-inclusive. So please do feel free to check that out. Follow up. If he's coming to your area, you're not going to want to miss him. He's fantastic, as you have seen here. And, Michael, I want to thank you so much for hanging in there with me through, you know, the my phone getting bumped off, your phone shutting off. I'm just glad that you, you know, kept on rolling and weren't, I don't even know if you were aware that I wasn't there, but I'm grateful to you. That.
Well, thank you. Thanks. Yeah, that's no problem. And, yes, folks can go to my website and check my itinerary as well to see where I'm at. Right now I'm spending the last couple of days I am in Amesbury, Massachusetts, and I'll be doing a something at their Unity Church here. I'll be doing something Wednesday night for them, a healing a workshop evening. And then I'll be off to Portland, Oregon, for like Beaverton, Portland area for a few days, and then off to the five-day workshop intensive on mastery. So other than that, people can keep checking in. I'll be in Arizona and everywhere else throughout the country the rest of the year.
Perfect, perfect. And you did say that you do private
sessions. Yeah. On phone or in person, they can do. It's a mixture of healing, a reading, life guidance, relationship work, whatever's a person's needing to do. I do quite a diverse number of things, so we do whatever's needed.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, I want to thank all of my listeners for being on here today, and thank you so much, Michael. It has been wonderful having you on the show, and I'm looking forward to connecting with you again in the future.
Thank you, and peace be with all of you.
Thank you. And for those out there, just want to remind you that on August the 10th, we're going to have Michelle Miller here talking to us about limbic resonance. On the 24th of August, we're going to have Kelly Fenters back. She's going to be talking to us about hypnotherapy. And this week, on Thursday at 6:30, her Universal Laws course starts. You can find out more by going to the main site of The Honoring Hour, which is www.thehonoringhour.com. And on the right of that page, there's a link that will take you to a page that's set up for Kelly. It'll tell you a little bit about it. There's a download, and it tells you about the show. So please do contact her if you have any other information, or you can email me directly at talkintoangels@aol.com. That, again, is on the main website. Thank you so much for listening, and I'm just going to sign off by playing God is in Charge by Sabina.
And I will be all right. When fear overwhelms me, when I seem to fall, I just need to remember where I am coming from. When life is taking over, one madness at a time, I stop and remind myself. Getting closer, surrounding my face, I go back to my source for guidance and pray for help. I surrender to that power deep within my soul. I feel comfort and peace, and I let go. Yes, I know. All I need to do is stay on my path, and I will be alright. I know.